Okay, good morning. The House Education Committee called to order. Today's Friday, March 23, 2012. Time is 8:08. Present are Representative Seaton, Representative Peggy Wilson, Representative Cisna, Representative Kawasaki told me he's packing and be a little bit late, but he will be here. Representative Pruitt is traveling, and myself, Representative Alan Dick. We do have a quorum, and if we can make sure our cell phones are off. We have two items on the agenda today. First order of business is the superintendent presentation by Joe Beckford, Aleutian Region School District, and HB 330, State Education Standards. Superintendent Beckford, we have your PowerPoint presentation, and Annette will page us through it. Introduce yourself for the record and start with your presentation, sir.
Thank you very much. My name is Joseph Beckford. I'm the superintendent for the Aleutian Region School District. And on behalf of the staff, students, and communities of the Aleutian Region, I want to thank for this opportunity to give this presentation and tell a little about us. Shall we go ahead and proceed with the slides?
Go ahead and just say next slide, and Annette will turn page two for you.
Well, on the first slides, you can see that we have a little model that we put on it, serving two hemispheres geographically, culturally, and intellectually. And if you go to the next slide, you'll see that the Aleutian Region School District actually serves two hemispheres. If we had communities still out in Attu, we would go into the Eastern Hemisphere, and so we serve from approximately 173.11 or 164.44 west to 173.11 east longitude. One of the board seats actually does represent Erickson Air Force Base at Chimya. So that tells you where we are located. The next slide, who we serve. Currently, we have two communities west of Unalaska that we serve. They are Yakov Netsvatov School in Atka and Adak School on Adak Island. Nikolsky School was closed in 2010 after it failed to meet the minimum count of 10 students for two consecutive years, which is unfortunate because Nikolsky is a community that has a documented history of over 8,000 years, probably the oldest community in the United States. Wow. So the next slide, if you move on, shows the air routes. And the Aleutian region and our communities serve a very critical role for both telecommunications and for transportation, as the ADAC airport is a critical alternate for flights going both from the United States as well as coming over the poles and heading to Asia. And if you can see those routes that are on that map, you can see the number of I'm not sure if this is all the routes, but from the map I was able to pull up, it shows you some of the routes that go by there. And at ADAC, it'd be located between Great Sitkin on that map and Kanaga. Moving on to how we're doing, for over a decade, the district has conducted an ongoing professional development program. We've been working for over a decade to align our curriculum with state standards and with national standards, and all of those have been aligned. As a result, I think, of this and our delivery systems, all of our students who have passed the three sections of the qualifying exam, our students test at or above what the anticipated levels are on standardized testing. And I can tell you that truancy is not an issue in Aleutian Region. Our students really are actively involved and engaged learners. You go to the next slide on challenges. All of the communities along the Alaska Peninsula and out to the Aleutians have experienced significant declines in community population, which is mirrored in the student populations for the schools. One of the big problems that we have then is we downsize, and we have to downsize staff as well, is that how do we maintain our programs and keep the opportunities available for students, and one of those is through broadband access to the internet and supplementing our programs with programs that we can be offered through telecommunications, virtual schools, and other programs. Right now, we don't have bandwidth to support those programs, even for the University of Alaska. trying to use programs like Illuminate, and even Skype works marginally in our location. So that has been a real challenge for us. And we search for programs we can supplement and give students additional experiences beyond what we can do in the classroom. Another problem that we face is retaining teachers that have the skills and knowledge to develop multi-aids, because there are a few schools that prepare teachers to deliver educational programming to multi-age and multi-grades. And so we spend a lot of resources training our teachers. In fact, we have an ongoing program which we meet every 2 weeks, and our teachers put in the equivalent of 14 extra days a year on professional development. And so we address two issues. One is we've looked at professional readings and what does current research tell us that we should be doing. And then we've worked extensively on assessment to keep our assessment in line with the state standards. And also the other thing is that is people that have the personality and skills to live in such a remote location, living in locations where sometimes the plane doesn't come in for a couple of weeks can be very disconcerting for people. So those are some of the challenges that we face. I think overall, when I speak to you, I can assure you that the students are well served by the curriculum and the instructional program that we have. We had a girl who graduated in December who enrolled in the University of Alaska, seems to be doing well, called, very excited to tell us she had gotten an A on her first paper. Our graduates are living productive lives. Of course, in this part of the world, the industry is fish. And for our communities, I think that the turnabout in enrollment, the decline of enrollment is about to happen as the fish plant in Africa has been quadrupled in size, and APICTA has announced a $10 million expansion, which I believe they're going to put in crab and cod farms, which will provide for year-round employment. Also, I unplugged the telephone here in the hotel. I'm on my way to Africa right now, if I didn't mention that earlier, so in an hour or so I'm running to the airport to hop on the flight and hopefully wing my way westward. But Accra, and then Icicle Seafoods has taken over the fish plant in ADAC, and I think that's going to help stabilize that community and lead it to growth as well. So I think there are real positive signs for out here. And the other thing I think is important is that these two communities are net contributors, both to the state of Alaska as well as to the world in providing high-quality seed products to the world market. And this contributes to our students having a good global awareness of where they are and what their communities provide to the world in return. So that wraps it up pretty quickly, and I hope that gives you a little bit of a sense of Aleutian Region School District.
Thank you, Superintendent. Any questions from committee? Representative Cisna.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I would like to ask what efforts, a couple different things that are standard questions that I tend to be very interested in, and that is, it's Superintendent Beckforth, right? Or Ford. Beckford. Yeah, and I actually had the enormous pleasure and privilege to visit several of the communities in the Aleutians in 05, and actually in 1978 I was able to get out to ADAC, so I actually have been able to see some of, and of course ADAC at that point was a base, and it was very different than it is now, but what you see when you're there is the incredible resources and the fact that there on in Dutch Harbor you've got the largest seaports, certainly in America, but maybe in the world as well. Enormous number of resources in the Aleutians. And yet we have Nikolsky, and as I understand, on that island, there were 30 communities. when the Russians first got there. Have you heard that as well?
That would sound reasonable to me.
Yeah, and the resources are there to sustain those people. And yet now we have schools that are closing because we're not able to, with our, the way we're using the resources, we're not able to sustain populations. And that's really quite frightening in a statement about kind of how we're doing things that I think is extraordinarily troubling. And what you have in the Aleutians are people who have lived there for thousands of years and been able to use the resources, obviously very successfully, but we can't do it anymore, and we're the ones that are educating. So have you brought in the elders? Have you been working at all with what memory there is of how it was done so that we can make positive that out of our school programs, we come up with students that are learning how to live not only in California and other parts of the country, but in the Aleutians as well?
We have quite an active cultural program. In fact, one of the projects that we undertook, and I don't know if you ever had the opportunity to see them, was the dance group from Attica, which I think is probably the premier, well, I feel it's the premier dance group among the native groups in Alaska. And we made investment in time to do that. I think that our students have a good sense of place. And we do talk with the elders. I work closely. In fact, the communities are such that, and I've been with the district for so long that I not only know all the students, I know all the people in the communities. And so we work with that, and when ADAC came online, we expanded that program, because ADAC is not a Native community. It's a very diverse community. In fact, I think we probably have more Hispanic in ADAC now than we have Aleuts. But we work with both parents to really empower them and let them know that it's their schools. These are community schools, and they're a community resource. And to make people feel comfortable with that and being comfortable in the school, coming to the school, and being involved with the school. So I'm satisfied that we have a high participation rate, high interest rate from parents, and high participation rate, whether it's having student conferences with them or for events that are sponsored in the buildings that help contribute to community life as well.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And so there are two schools in the district now, but I didn't get the number of students in each school and what grades they cover. Can you give us that information?
Both schools are K-12 schools, and we have 10 students right at the borderline with ATCA, and we have 22 students in ADAC.
Okay, and there was nothing in here on graduation rates or dropout rates or on AYP or the success of your students meeting, where they're at with SBAs or anything. Do you have that information as well?
I can give you some of that information. All of our students have graduated. All of our students have passed the high school graduation qualifying exam. We've had one dropout in 12 years. Wow. And with regards to this, I can't give you the specifics on the state benchmarks, but again, that's in part a function of the scope and sequence that we were able to deliver. But I expect that I can say to you with some degree of certainty that our students are doing well on the benchmarks as well.
I have a question.
Okay. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Superintendent Beckford, I know hundreds of years ago, at least anyway, that the people made their living out of the ocean, but a lot of it was the mammals in the ocean. that they can't harvest anymore, and so we're left with the fish, pretty much. And the fact that the kids continue in school and do graduate and sounds like gets pretty good grades says that they see the need for education because they can't continue on the life that their ancestors had. Is there any way at this time, I know you said your internet capabilities were really bad, do you have iPads or anything like that, and do they catch anything, or do you even have cell phones?
Well, cell phones, and as far west as I am right now, which is on Alaska Dutch Harbor, although you have partial cell phone service in ADAC, there's no cell phone service in ATCA. And with regards to internet, we do have internet connectivity. I don't want to say that we don't have any. The issue is having enough broadband so that you could, we can't do, I believe it's asynchronous communication, so we can't do video and audio at the same time. And when we tried doing it with some of the classes, what we'd have to do is establish the video through Illuminate and then make a separate telephone call. And of course, then they don't coordinate with one another. You're going to wind up with the double bounce and the gap between people speaking and what you hear. Up until a few years ago, we had Starband, and that worked quite well, even though we were out of the design footprint. But Starband went to a different satellite, knocked us off altogether. And the cost they have broadband to the clinics in the communities. However, the schools don't have access to that, and it's prohibitively high in order to get those lines put in. So, you know, we do as best we can with the resources that we have.
Very good.
Okay, I have one more
follow up.
Now, is there any future possibilities for that broadband to? Can you give me just a round figure to get it hooked? How far are the schools from the places that have it? So how is it miles or is it just blocks or what? How far would that broadband have to be connected to the school, and what would the cost be?
Well, in the case of ADAC, they have broadband right in the same building. But the cost for that would be probably in the range of about $10,000 a month, and you'd be paying for that for 12 months a year. So, and then for ATCA, there's, again, the clinic has broadband, T1 connection to the clinic, which is probably less than a mile from the school. But then you're still looking at the numbers that I mentioned to establish the service, so it's the cost that's prohibitively high.
But in the same building, can't you just join them somehow? And I know that.
I'd love to.
So even just to join.
It's like siphoning gas out of somebody's automobile tank.
Okay.
When you do that, it's illegal.
Well, no, pay them. To just join them. I suppose that's impossible too. I know you probably laugh because it's ridiculous. But is there any way that you could join them and pay them for part of it or something?
I laugh not because it's ridiculous. I laugh because if I could do it, I would.
Yeah. But I realize the cost.
So there's no way that I know right now that we can tap into their line, that they can even allow us to do that without putting their own service and the agreements that they have for that service in jeopardy.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Representative Seaton, and then we do need to move on.
Thank you. On your slide 7, you have where a tower are we doing. It says test results show that the students perform at or above anticipated levels on standardized achievement tests when aptitude is compared with performance. Can you explain that, what you mean by when aptitude is compared with performance?
Yes, sir. For every standardized achievement test, there's an aptitude test, which is basically a test of ability. So you're looking at the performance against capacity. And so when you give the aptitude test, and there's one that goes with the state's program, you get from the aptitude test a projected score of how the student should do on the achievement test. And then you can compare to see if it's right on, if the student is not performing where the anticipated score says that they should, from the aptitude to the achievement, then you sit down and say, listen, what's going on here? Because, you know, the indications are from the achievement test you should be doing a lot better. Or you can look at it in some students, and more often what we find is our students score higher than what that anticipated score was from the aptitude test, which tells you you have motivated kids who are working at and sometimes above the anticipated capacity from the aptitude test. But one thing that I would like to caution is that it is my belief that aptitude is not static, that you can actually develop intellect and make the intellectual capacity. And I think that's a critical role of schools, is to develop that capacity. To give you an example, we had a student who graduated a few years ago who in his early days and under the old rules for special education would have been classified as mentally retarded. When they changed the point for determining that, the student went into learning disabled. That student went on to pass all three components of the high school graduation qualifying exam and graduate with a full diploma. And that student is gainfully employed now in the fishing industry. So that explains what I'm talking about when I say the students score at or above what those anticipated scores are.
So
follow-up question.
So you're not talking about anticipated grade level. You're talking about taking the test to see where their achievement is and then comparing that to I will have to get some more information from the department as to how that works if we're not talking about grade level performance.
Grade level performance. We're talking about the ability, a student's ability, versus their performance. And aptitude. I hate to use the word IQ test because the testing companies would say no, that's not what it is at all. But it is a test in some respects of their IQ versus their achievement.
Okay. Thank you, Superintendent, and we will clarify things on this end. Okay, that's a part of the world I've never been to. I long to be there, although I do identify with a teacher being in a very remote community and almost weeping when the mail plane turned back after the second week. I do identify with that. Thank you, Superintendent Beckford, and I guess you got to catch a plane here pretty quick. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Before we go on the presentations, we requested at the last meeting CUSPAC to send us their data on adequate yearly project or progress, completion rates and all, because we had very excellent performance, project-based. Students seemed to be doing well. But when we have the data, and I think that was supplied to every member, I think that we need to have, before the end of the term here, a look at what we see as what sounds like an effective school district that has poor performance. Mm-hmm. There was none of those data presented. And yet we're seeing, graduation rates that aren't very good in the 50s. We're seeing, multiple years of math in the 30% for AYP and language arts in the 30s, 40s, 50s. And I think that we need to investigate this because we had a big push last year to look at project or theme-based education. Mm-hmm. Cuspuck School seemed to be engaging the students, seemed to be working there. The presentation we had was very good. The numbers do not look good. And I think that we really need to find out where the rubber meets the road and what we want to accomplish. And so I just wanted to bring that up because we did have the data from the presentation. And so I would like to request that we get the data on all of the rest of the presentation. I mean, we don't have the data. I mean, we're trying to figure out how the school district is performing, and yet when the superintendents present the data, I mean, present their presentation, they're not giving us the data. And so then we have to go back later and look and say, okay, how does that square with what we're hearing? And unless we have that information, we're really unable to ask questions of the superintendents when they're before us about what do you identify as this disconnect between what seems to be very engaging of the students and the performance that we're not seeing on the testing, AYP, possibly attendance, graduation rates, and to see if we can figure out a way forward where we get both engagement and performance that will put the students in good stead for careers and further education. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, thank you, Representative Seaton. That's good perception. And any time you have one variable in an equation, you can solve for that variable. But any time you have four, five, six variables in an equation, we do need to narrow it down and find out what a couple of them are before we can really identify what works and what doesn't. Representative Sisna.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do identify with Representative Seaton's comments. The thing that I've gone to all these different communities, and I did get a chance to spend more than 3 days in Nikolsky, which was incredible. And there were I think close to 40 people there when I was visiting. It's more than, I mean, it's dropped pretty close to half, I think, of the number. And the school was open, and I stayed in the school, and I emailed back to the office, so I was very much in contact, met with the students, was able to be in several classes with them, and it was an extremely healthy community. We're not looking at those kinds of things. We're not looking at does everybody working full time, be it subsistence or whether or not there's jobs, and in a community like that there's a few jobs. It's just a few. There was a physician's assistant at the clinic, and the teacher, and several village councils that were existing that had jobs related to them. But it was a community where everybody was busy. So that kind of instance where you're not needing resources from other places. We give resources, but they're housed in different buildings and not working, and people go and try to get parts off of the old things that have been taken out there because they don't work and didn't work for very long. This is all an educational issue as far as I'm concerned, but we're not looking at it that way. And you're talking about too many variables, and so you want to shift down to a few. Survival, to me, seems like one of the really biggest things we want to look at. And are people healthy? Are they able to make a life that keeps the community fed and out of the rough elements, and be able to live full lives and healthy lives? We don't look at this way. And it's really troubling to me because it's the bottom line. It's what gets you through 100 years and 200 and 300 and 400 years. And we're at several hundred years with the Western. I want our educational system to really work well and really get people to live the lives they choose to live well. Mm-hmm. I think, and this is a question, if in fact Superintendent Beckforth is still online, what I didn't hear was when the population of Nikolsky got down to 8, I think it was, I read a newspaper article on the fact that it was going out. What efforts are there to try to help communities in struggling communities that actually have resources that are about to develop? You need to have a local workforce. You need to have those people educated so that they can keep the airport still open, because we're going to be developing the resources right there. And we need to have people that are local that have the local knowledge. Are there efforts to help those communities? And are there ways to maybe incorporate things that I maybe don't even know about, like homeschool, some kind of help beyond closing? Because closing just isn't, it closes down a town completely in a lot of ways. We lose. We're the ones who lose. So is that a question that we could even ask of the commissioner?
I think it's an excellent question to ask of the commissioner. I don't think today is the day to ask it. We will have time between now and the end of session, although I bet when we won't have time to solve it. But we certainly could call the commissioner back when things taper off towards the end, because it would be certainly we need a holistic view towards education. Thank you, Representative Sisson. Okay, seeing no further question, now we'll move on to HB 330, State Education Standards. We did adopt CS version E on Wednesday. We've had public testimony, heard preliminary comments from Commissioner Hanley. And Commissioner Hanley, would you like to provide further comments on HB 330?
Thank you, Chair Dick. For the record, my name is Mike Hanley. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. And I did give an overview, and there's not much more I really probably need to add today, but there are a couple things that in regards to the conversation that we had on Monday or Wednesday, I guess, in regards to the bill. One is there was a connection to, and I know in one of the papers that had gone out, there was a connection between the standards and NCLB. And I assure you that our standards have been worked on for 2 years. The waiver conversation has only come up in the last few months. It has never been a part of the standards development. There's never been a connection to those. The people that develop those standards are focused on what we believe the kids need. It has nothing to do with NCLB. The only thing that ever connected those two was HB 330. You know, and it only connected them because there is that potential that if these standards don't go forward. But that's it. That has nothing. You know, when I first got here, I set a path for finishing the development process and getting to the state board by December. So all that was done prior to waiver conversations. So that would surely be an erroneous reason to adopt standards or to push standards forward to fit in with some federal guidelines. And we don't typically do that here anyway, and it surely isn't my mode to see how we can, you know, sacrifice our kids to meet federal guidelines. There are just a couple things that I would like to touch base on, and I do know that it's been brought up at the bottom of the first page of the bill. There's just something I struggle with. It does say that on line 2, or line 12, that the legislature finds that the education standards are developed for a small percentage of students who are to earn a four-year degree. And I really do believe that our standards have done a much better service for our kids heading to careers than it has done for kids aiming for college. We have a lot more kids moving into careers successfully, percentage-wise, than we do. And as you've heard, only 7% are actually getting their 2 or 4 year degree in a reasonable amount of time. So I don't believe that our standards have been set for, you know, a very small group. It's actually done a great service to students who have, and prepared students for moving into careers, but has not prepared them apparently very well for getting them to complete a 4 year degree, you know, as the 7% shows. So I do believe that our new proposed standards addresses that more effectively, and does we do anticipate that that would have an increase in that regard, and would lessen the need for remediation when our students get to college.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, my question is, and I do think this is extraordinarily relevant, is that one of the things that we don't do too well in this state, beyond take out the schools for a second and look at where they're heading, and what we're not doing well is entrepreneurial endeavors. We're not there. We're not starting new businesses. We don't have those things, and it's teachable. It is something that's taught. Is there any way that you can look at standards and tweak out the entrepreneurial part, the skill sets that are required there?
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, to incorporate entrepreneurial skills into the standards, is that the question?
Mm-hmm.
I believe the standards that we have now address the skills needed to be an entrepreneur. They don't specifically speak to how to be an entrepreneur. I think that's very much a curricular decision that local districts can say, okay, we've got models, we've got a lot of them around the state. As I taught, I used to do what was called a mini society, and the kids would develop products, and we would work through the whole process of the math and developing a product, and what did it cost, and what did it, and how much could you sell for, and profit and loss, and net, and gross, and all those things. But I do believe that that's more of a curricular issue, which is developed more at the local level than we would want to determine at the state level.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner. Go ahead.
I spoke just briefly in regards to the two-track model, and I do believe that in the right context, that is a good model because students truly do have increased opportunity. For one thing, I would ask this committee to consider, or the task force to consider, if they are going to look at the two tracks, is look at the context of putting two tracks in Alaska, because I really want what's best for our kids, and we have 30% of our schools that have less than 75 kids. We have 36% of our schools that have less than 100 kids, and most of those are K-12 schools. So 179 schools with 100 or less kids, and of those, probably 30 to 40 of them are high schoolers. And if you have 30 or 40 high schoolers, I'm just doing some basic math, I would figure three teachers maybe for 40 kids. I honestly don't know how a school could truly offer two tracks adequately for kids that want to take the different career paths. And I think that if schools have to choose a path, then the students lose, because then instead of increased opportunity, they have a decreased opportunity. A school has to say, we can really only offer this way or this way. And so I would strongly suggest that this committee take that into consideration, or the task force take that into consideration when looking at this. I don't believe that Ireland has the same situation with small rural schools that Alaska does. So it's a model that can work, but is it a model that works everywhere? I'd be concerned that it would work, and that it may not work, and we may sacrifice some of our kids in small areas.
Commissioner, if I could comment on it, I think that's an excellent observation, and it certainly would be one that would be taken quite seriously by the task force, if the task force ever does come into being. So that's a very good observation, and I appreciate your heart for small schools. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, I believe what we've got here is standards consideration, and I'm not sure that tracks are necessarily standards consideration, that tracks can actually be methods of engaging students in a vocational track that may not have a different set of standards than those that are used for college. So I think that as a task force would consider such, I would hope that it would be pointed that the discrimination between, do we need a different set of standards for people going to in a career track, or do we need a different set of engagement opportunities for those that are going on there based on the same set of standards? But I think that there are many students in our state that you cannot sit down in a classroom and say, do this paper and pencil lesson and learn math that way, whereas if they are building, if they're engaged in vocational tracking, then, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the standards that they're going to learn are less or even different, but tracks can be a curriculum track, not necessarily a standards track. So I just want to make sure that we don't put on the record that tracks necessitate different standards in education.
Through the chair, I Representative Seaton, I fully agree with that. And so when I saw tracks, I perceived two totally different tracks. When I see Ireland, when I see Singapore, and I see Shanghai, they have tests, and the kids are then moved into. You know, those kids don't have necessarily options. They move as per their test scores. You're right. I think strengthening a system that we have now, strengthening a CTE model and teaching through that model would not necessitate two separate tracks. I guess when I read this, I perceived two standards, two sets of assessments, two separate tracks. So thank you.
And also, Commissioner, for the record, if this task force ever came into being, and if it was the finding of the task force that once people other than educators were involved in the designing of the standards, and if it was the finding of the task force that the state standards were the best that the students could ever ask for, I'd see no reason why I believe you'd have unanimous support. There'd be tremendous energy, and there wouldn't be divided attentions and divided opinions. So it's not like... I think the main idea is to just get just other viewpoints from the other stakeholders other than educators. And I believe if we did that and the state standards were adopted, there'd be tremendous consensus and a lot of energy. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, could you get us some information? I'd like to have information. You just gave us some of it, but I'd like to have it in writing. Like what percent of the schools have less than 25 kids? What percent of the schools have, five or less high school students? What percent of the schools, and I mean schools, not school districts so much, but schools, and then what percent of the school districts don't have broadband capacity, so that we know exactly, we really don't know which ones have it and which ones don't, and it would be nice for us to be able to know, okay, if we're looking at doing this, this percent of the schools aren't going to be able to do what we're thinking about. And so if you could give us some information like that so that we can kind of get it, our hands around some of that thought process of what the schools are capable of out there and which ones are just like the one we just heard from that, you know, not much is working because they can't even download a video that is speaking at the same time that's got audio on it. So that we kind of have an idea of what the challenges are. Sometimes we kind of overlook some of these things, and if we know some more facts, I think it would be good for us to have that information.
Okay, thank you. I can do that. Okay. The only other comment that I would make in regards to HB 330 is one that I began yesterday, and that is my concern about a delay in developing higher level standards. With a report coming out at the end of 2013, potentially being before the 2014 legislature, the 2014 legislature were to move it forward and it were to take, let's say, a year and a half to develop those standards and then the 6 month or 3 to 6 month period for the board to put it out for development, we're looking at 4 years. If for some reason it didn't get through the process in 2014 and it goes to 2015, we're 5 years out. And, you know, our standards are stay the way they are for 4, 5, 6 years. When we're looking at a 6-year, basically, and it's obviously been a lot longer than 6 years this time, typically best practices says you review your standards. You don't necessarily redo them all, but you review your standards every 6 years. We're pretty close to a six-year review of standards at that point anyway, and I honestly believe that keeping that freezing of our current standards in place really holds our kids hostage to a lower set of standards, or recognized lower set of standards than what they could have. And I honestly believe that they become the collateral damage. This four-year cohort becomes the collateral damage of settling for standards that are lower for them. I'd like to see those standards move forward, even if we go through a process of review and a new system that will come about in 4, 5, or 6 years.
Yeah. And just addressing that briefly, and I believe Annette has the an opinion from Dean Michelle on that. But the fact that we have standards doesn't mean, like even now in was it Petersburg, they're teaching calculus. It's not like the standards are a ceiling beyond which nobody can go. You can teach calculus, trigonometry. Any school or district can do whatever they want right now. All we're defining with the current standards, and I agree that they're poor, is what the state will test. And so maybe our assessment mechanism needs to be adjusted a bit. But it's not like the standards are a ceiling beyond which nobody can go. Excuse me. If we could get Annette to testify and clarify for us on this regard.
Annette Kreitzer, staff to Representative Alan Dick. When the commissioner brought this up to the last meeting, I did make a request of Jean Michelle providing the transcript to her of the commissioner's comments in the last meeting. If this moves forward to the legislature in 2014, the legislature for some reason looked at the task force recommendation in the course of that year, and they don't come up with a bill to change this. The standards as they are currently will stay as they are until the legislature, until the process goes through. Our standards are frozen indefinitely, and there was a little more to that. But all the task force does, as you know and as is in the bill, the task force comes up with a process for vetting the standards. It has nothing to do with the legislature after that. Education is not stuck forever if the legislature doesn't act. And Jean agrees with that interpretation. She says also Section 4 repeals the whole bill in 2014. There is nothing that leaves the department tied to the old standards. And if that's not clear enough, I can see if she's available to be online.
Representative Seaton?
Sure. Maybe we should get her online then. But, Mr. Chairman, while we're waiting for that, the proposed standards for language art include two new sections, two new whole categories. One is speaking and listening, and the other is language. And I guess what we're saying is those are not going to be incorporated statewide. We can't assess on them until they're adopted as standards. So is my interpretation that we are saying that for the interim, while the task force would be reviewing how to vet standards, and of course in the standards, if the task force has a vetting process, those standards would have to go through that process before they're adopted. Otherwise, we wouldn't be putting a vetting program in and then saying, but we're going to not vet the standards. But it seems to me that these, the speaking and listening and the language standards that are incorporated in the new paradigm that we're using for statewide standards will be ignored statewide. Now, a certain district could come along and say, we like that and we're going to teach that even though it won't be assessed. Mm-hmm. By on any of the statewide tests. We won't know how we're performing compared to other districts across the state meeting those standards. I totally agree that there's nothing that keeps a district from offering physics 2 or aeronautics or something else if they want to do that. However, we are not in standards. Unless something is in standards, we're not offering that and assessing that and the performance on those across the state. So granted, each district can do something on their own, but it seems like that the purpose of statewide standards are so that we have those expectations of students across the state and have an assessment system. So I guess, is that your interpretation of what would happen with the, since these statewide standards, the new sections would be held in abeyance until the vetting process takes place?
Thank you for the question. That's a hard question to answer because as I look at the math standards, it says students will study, and as I look at the writing standards, it instead says students will understand and know. So even between the standards, I see an inconsistency of the standards, and that's what causes me to say that we need a conversation, because even between the writing and the math standards, there is inconsistency there.
But
okay, let me answer the question then. Then the answer is that if a district, say, wanted to teach public speaking or testifying before the legislature, the district could do that. The district could have a formative and summative evaluation on that, and they could follow any one of these proposed standards. They could do a formative and summative evaluation, and the only component that would not happen is that they would not be compared on a statewide basis, but they would have their own personal formative and summative evaluation. Representative Cisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and actually I'd like to ask a question of the commissioner. I don't know if this is being devil's advocate or just being really curious about kind of the conversation that we've had here. And I asked about entrepreneurial, mm-hmm. and Mr. Commissioner, your answer was that it's school by school and who's in the school and what kind of teachers that bring to life the possibilities of teaching people what's right there and within the community and things that they could do to actually bring to life the, and what I was kind of coming up with my own identification of entrepreneurial, beginning ways to create, and I don't know if this works right, but the requirement needed to live and sustain families and communities. I don't know, it's that sort of close to entrepreneurial. So it doesn't sound like to me that your answer was that we need standards in place to do that. We need the teachers. We need the school resources, really, to do that. Actually, the elders did that for thousands of years, but we have something that actually should work better. And we are in conditions in the Aleutians. Just look at the Aleutians right now, where populations are going down in a part of the world that has the best resources you could possibly ever have, and it still does. The mammals are a problem, but there's so much. There's hydro systems. There's the two oceans meeting, so you've got amazing energy right there. And yet we're collapsing in many communities. There is a challenge to our school system. Doesn't sound like it's standards. Doesn't sound like that at all. And so why are we tied? Is it the federal government? Is it the way we're thinking? We've got to save these communities. We've got to turn around a situation where the entire population and the planet is burgeoning outward and we're going inward. That's not right. Is there a way to do this?
Representative Cisna, I think Representative Dick spoke to it earlier. It's easy to quantify when you have one variable and solve for one variable. Very difficult when you have several, and I don't think we could point a finger at any particular place to the federal government or state government or standards and say, if we fix this one piece, everything is better. It really becomes a very conglomerate answer, and I think the power of that answer becomes really what takes place at the local level. Representative Wilson mentioned before, the standards, I don't remember, they don't really matter, or they're not that big a deal, I think is what it was. And And I understood what you were saying. And because standards alone, standards don't teach kids. Standards are just standards. Standards aim. They give you a focus. The power becomes when you have a focus and you have a powerful curriculum, and you, more importantly, you have a powerful community and powerful teachers who are making that connection, aiming kids in the right direction. So I think it's get all those pieces together to make that difference. And I don't think we can do it just by addressing one of them.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. Commissioner, when you get that other information that I asked just a little bit ago, would you add to that, I would like to know what it's going to cost us as a state to put those standards, if we said today we're going to adopt these standards, then there's a lot of work that's got to be done. And I would like to know what the cost is going to be. What's the cost is going to be to the state, and what's the cost going to be to the schools to get this going and get it all in place? And the reason I want to know that is because I want to know how much that cost is, and if we decide that, and I agree with what was commented on earlier, we could put those standards in place right now and still look at what we, you know, have the task force look and see what's going on. But I want to know if how much that cost is going to be, and if it's going to make a difference for us. So what is the cost going to be to put the standards in place? And I mean the total cost. I mean, that mean there's going to be some training involved and stuff. I want to know what all that was going to cost. And then I think that if we go two different directions does not mean that we have two different sets of standards. I don't think that. I mean, that wasn't what my thoughts were at all, because we can go different directions. But my overall feelings are it's not just Alaska schools that are failing. If you look at worldwide, America is falling way behind. Mm-hmm. So it's not just Alaska. So we do have to do something, but we have to figure out what we're going to do to help Alaska get better, because that's not going to be the same thing that Washington is going to do to get better. And so just adopting the standards that the rest of the United States is adopting, I don't think is going to be the answer necessarily. And so because of that, I think we need to really have a task force, and whether we adopt the standards now or in a couple years, I don't know that answer, but I want to know what the cost is that we're looking at.
Thank you. And I believe we have Jean Michelle online, but I need somebody else to clarify the question. Annette, would you want to restate the question for Jean Michelle?
Annette Kreitzer, staff to Representative Alan Dick. The issue is that the commissioner believed that if the bill moves forward to the legislature in 2014 and the legislature for some reason looked at the task force recommendation of the course of that year and they don't come up with a bill to change this, the standards as they are currently will stay as they are until the legislature, until the process goes through. His concern is the standards would be frozen.
And Mr. Chairman.
Jean Michelle, are you online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
I believe I had the question for Jean Michelle.
Oh, okay. Representative Seaton, would you restate the question then?
Yeah, I'm looking at page 4 of the bill under Section 3 that says that the state school board cannot adopt standard or shall adopt content and performance educational standards, including grade level expectations, only after the standards have been vetted under a process created by the Joint Legislative Task Force under Section 1 of this Act. So I guess what I am seeing is a prohibition on the adoption of standards, any different than the ones we have right now, until the process that has been done reviews whatever standards are applicable or are created, and they have to be vetted before they can be adopted by the school board. Now, if am I misinterpreting that, or are you saying that the state school board can adopt standards without the statutorily required vetting process being completed?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, this is Jean Michelle with Legislative Affairs Legal Services. Yes and no. I am what this bill. This is a temporary provision. That's why it's all uncodified. So until July 1, 2014, which is the repeal date in Section 4 of the bill, that is true. There is a both that provision that you cited as well as page 2, line 31, anticipates that the board will rely upon this vetting process that's developed by the task force. On the other hand, the whole bill is repealed, including the task force and the restrictions on the state board in adopting its education standards on July 1 of 2014. And what remains in state law is the authority that the board is functioning under currently, which is 1407020B, which provides that they have a duty to adopt performance standards. There is a potential separation of powers issue with limiting the board's executive functions. But what this task force is advisory, and there is nothing in the bill that currently requires the board to adopt standards developed by a legislative body. The way the bill is drafted is a process that we're directing the board to undertake before they adopt standards. So as I anticipate under this bill, if the board does not adopt standards using the vetting process by July 1, 2014, the existing standards expire under this bill unless they're still in regulation, and the task force process expires on that date, and the board functions as it has before the adoption of this bill.
So,
Representative Seaton.
So question then, so we have a set of standards that were previously generated which are on the table now. And those could be the standards that were vetted through this process, or if the legislative task force looks up and looks at page 5, lines 8 through 18, or 5 through 17, the content standards, and determines that they're wanting the standards to meet other goals, and different standards would have to be generated and then run through the vetting process. But on July 14th, the vetting process dies, and the state school board could go back and adopt standards under their current authority. Would they necessarily at that time then have to go back through a public process of generating and public comments and all the requirements that are necessary before they adopt standards after July 2014?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, in a former life, I advised the Department of Education on those types of issues, and I hesitate to provide direct advice to the executive branch. But in my opinion, if the department or the board had already undertaken a public comment period, they can continue the hearing on those regulations. They have the option of modifying the regulations throughout the public hearing process, and so it would depend very much upon the way the board handled the continuation of that hearing and whether or not they'd have to go back out for public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You know, as we listen to this, it seems like every issue we talk about, all of a sudden it broadens out into a huge conversation. And that's what causes me to think that there really is a need for a task force, because these things, issues need to be hammered out. I have a tremendous, I am an educator. I have an awesome respect for educators. But it's just the, I see a desperate need for other stakeholders involved in the process. And that's why there's the calling for the task force. Commissioner Hanley, any other comments, sir?
I don't think so at this time.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any amendments from committee members?
No discussion.
Okay. Okay, first I will close public testimony on HB 330. Excuse me, further discussion. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess this goes to finance next, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to point out on page 1, line 11, and of course this is a finance issue, but we say that that funding, that state educational funding support in grades kindergarten through K-12 is increasing at a significant rate, and you know, that's presuming, I think, what's going to be adopted in the legislature, next legislature, so that might be better to talk about what we have done in the past, but that'll be, finance can determine, maybe they are going to increase at a significant rate this year, and I'd just like to point that out. On the number 2 on page 1, I think that we do have an issue. We might look at, we or the next committee referral, look at that as far as whether the standards have been applicable for college or whether they were really career standards, since the majority of the school children that go through our graduation do go on to careers instead of completion of college, and whether those standards were really there. And I'd like to also point out on page 4, the makeup of the committee. The makeup of the committee has no one representing the universities, and one of the things that we have noted in our standards has been that we have not had students ready to go to the university, you know, 30 to 50%. I think it's 50% of the students that go out of our high schools have to take remedial courses. So without having a representative or representatives from the university on a task force that is putting in standards, I think may leave us short again on the expectation and the where we want our students to perform. And I just, under committee discussion, I'd also like to say that I am concerned that the language standards are going to be left off for 2 years of, and that is the content areas of speaking and listening, which I think are, speaking and listening and language, those standards are very critical to students across our entire state. And so I am concerned that we don't incorporate those in a timely manner, other than on an individual district basis, and that there won't be any statewide assessment on those critical factors in our education. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. As always, very perceptive. Okay. Representative Wilson, will you move CS for HB 330 as amended from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note? Did I say as amended? Give me. Representative Wilson.
I'm thinking that what Representative Seaton said about having someone from the university on there would be good, because I think that as we look at, as the task force looks at education, I think that we how our teachers are trained are very, very important, and I think we should add that to it because I think the university needs to be aware that we feel, at least I feel, and I think there's other people feel, that maybe some of our teachers are not adequately taught for the some of the challenges that they'll face in some of the schools in Alaska. And so I think that I would like to see a university person on there, and preferably the person, and I don't know who that would be, but the person that's in charge of the teaching instruction part of the university.
Representative Wilson, do you want to offer a conceptual amendment?
Yes, I would. I would move amendment, conceptual amendment number one on page four, after D on line 12, that would add a person from the university that was head of the department that in teaches the teacher, the prospective teachers mm-hmm. Of the state.
Okay.
Of the university, I guess.
Any objection to the amendment?
I'll object to discussion. Is that an addition? So you're going to 9 members on line 6 instead of 8?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. I'll remove my objection.
Any further objection to the amendment? And with no further objection, the amendment number, conceptual amendment number 1, does pass. Okay. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move CS for House Bill 330, version E, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
And hearing no objection, CS HB 330, version E, passes from committee. We'll take a brief at ease. Education Committee, welcome back to order. Representative Seaton, do you have any other further thoughts or comments?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we've been talking quite a bit about, you know, rural Alaska and culture and all, and I just want to make sure that we don't anticipate that we are trying to take people's choices away from them. If we have a place such as Nikolsky, which the people have obviously chosen to move to somewhere that has a cash economy or that has a different economy or that functions in a different way, I am concerned that we address things like they need to stay static and that people shouldn't be able to choose to leave. If there is not a cash economy in a small area that has a small population, and people choose to have a cash economy, have fuel oil, have electricity, have those things versus the several hundred years of participation with natural resources, harvesting, and leading a subsistence lifestyle, I don't want to say that people should lose either choice, but I don't want to assume that because people are moving from a rural community, that that's not a choice that they're making on their own, and that their choice is driven by the educational system. Because I think that in many cases we had places on the outside of the Kenai Peninsula that were all there around the herring harvest that came in, and the herring moved and the people moved because the economy moved, and people have those choices that they get to make. and it's not all driven by the educational system. And so I think that we need to segregate what we want to do to prepare our children in the state to participate in either the subsistence or and their cultural economy or the cash economy of the state. But I don't think that we can dictate to people that we're going to keep schools open in a place that when you have a very few number of students becomes an educational system that you cannot educate for those options. I think that we have talked about, and we do have regional boarding schools as an option. We have home schools that are an option. We have a number of different ways when we get to a very small number of students, but in many cases, when you have a very small number of students, you lose those socialization and those interactions and those other skills. So I think people have a choice, and I don't want to say that every time that people choose to move to another area, whether it's a regional hub or something else, that those are bad decisions and that we are in any way forcing people to go in that or not. So I just wanted to say that as we consider educational topics, that we don't consider education as the only force that drives the economy, drives decisions by people across the state. And I don't want to prevent anybody from making choices, but I don't want people to assume from our discussions that our education system is the only force that people make their decisions on.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Oh, go ahead.
I feel that speaking of choices, I have to stand up for mine because I was giving kind of a not opposing view, but a different view. And my view actually, my degree was in sociology, but my BA, but anthropology was a minor. And I've lived here for 45 years and really been involved kind of throughout Alaska in a lot of ways, but I was a substitute teacher. I haven't done enough education, but nonetheless, I've been a bit involved. And when we talk about choices, I have several bills in this legislature actually that have to do with choice. Some people think it's choice, and some people think it's not choice. And there's actually quite a bit of study out there right now that's going on about cultures, civilizations that have had patterns that they lived within which made it impossible for them to survive. And when a dominant culture comes into an area, which happened here in Alaska, and we came into an area where they had figured out, they had made the choices, and their choices kept them alive for thousands of years. So not just a couple hundred years they survived, but for thousands of years. And how they're still here, I'm not quite sure, because choices are also something where you get to make the decision, and you are able to make the whole environment around you supporting your decision. And yet the first thing that happened in Alaska was people were not allowed, the dominant culture that came in did not allow the first people here to speak their language. We changed languages. And with the language, you change the culture, because language describes how people make it. And so what we as now, right here, we're not connected to a lot of the environment that occurred. All of those things happened before us. But what we're not doing in this body, and it's really, it does not bode well, that we're not really studying what's happening in those communities. So you and I can have this argument until the cows come home, but the fact of the matter is we don't really know what's going on. You can surmise things, and that's why I've been traveling the way I have, which is one-on-one, going into the community, not with my knowledge, but trying to find out what theirs is. And seeing that they don't see having building after building filled with obsolete equipment that was sent to them as a choice they made. It was a political choice we make. We put thousands, millions of dollars into we're helping these people. And we decide what they need for help. We don't talk with them and go by, it's not vetted in the community. The educational process isn't vetted in the community. It's vetted maybe by, and I think we've heard this before, a few families in the community, but not complete vetting. So you're really looking at survival issues. And we just today were talking about one of the wealthiest areas in the state where it's not that cold, it's not as hostile as further north, and you do have a richer environment. It is really just astounding. And on the island that Nikolsky is on, there's horses, there's cattle, they're just running free. There's either, it's either caribou or reindeer. So you do have mammals. And anybody can hunt it. There's no rules. There's no reason why you can't. It's an environment that you totally can live on. But we've never put in a port there. We've given them all kinds of different energy sources. But we're closing down the schools, but we're investing in all these other things and not bringing the people that still exist there into the vetting process. So I have a serious problem with choice and the discussion of the fact that we are letting these people choose to leave when in fact we've made it impossible for them to survive, and we've taken away kind of the furtherance of their language understanding. We chose that with the way we're here doing that right now. We need to listen more to what is happening in Alaska, and I think that's one of the failings that we have here, is not listening and really not understanding what's going on in all of these communities, and our economic survival is dependent on it. Thank you.
And thank you, Chairman. And I just wanted to bring the conversation to the Education Committee and schools. I don't think we can lay the responsibility for those people's choices, our people's choices. People leave Homer and go to Kenai. You know, I mean, people make choices based on a myriad of factors other than education. And I just wanted to make sure that we weren't telling the public that it was the education system that was driving the decisions by people in local communities, and that was the only factor. So thank you for letting me.
Now, and if I could just briefly summarize, because I struggle with every one of these issues. I raised five children in a log cabin in the days of dog teams and sweet sauce. And I struggled to make a living. I was a trapper, but I didn't like trapping. But I did it because I had to. I was a work construction. I'd worked in a mine. I did everything I could just because I was living in that land. And I wrestled with all the issues that people live in. Usually, people will pick a profession and go to where it works. But when you live out there, you pick a place and try to find a way to make a living. And it's very backwards and it's very difficult. I can remember one point in my life where it was 18 miles one way to Sparavon. I walked four round trips, that's four times 36 miles, to get a job to pick and shovel and make $1,000, because there was no economy there. So I understand why people leave small communities. So, but I agree with both. I love your compassion, your concern. At the same time, it's not necessarily, the school has is a component of it, but it is not the factor that drives people one way or another. Hopefully, schools like my children, I wanted to raise my children so that if they all wanted to live out in the woods, they could stay out in the woods, and if they all wanted to become pavement people, they could do that too. And I have one son right now, he's out living subsistence, out in Nicolai in Kuskokwim. But I have another daughter who is a realtor in Sun Valley, Idaho. I have another daughter who is a teacher in Palmer. I have another daughter who is just a great mom. And I have a son who is working way up in FAA. So my children were able to make those choices. And I believe that's the type of choice we're hoping our school system can provide our kids, that if they want to stay in the village, it becomes a better village. And if they want to move on, that's certainly their prerogative. Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do want to, we've traveled the world, Alaska, has traveled through different periods of time. And some of the things we talked about was then, and some of the things we're talking about are now. And the choices that they didn't have then, but they do have those choices now. And so we have to, we're a society that people have to take things, responsibility for a lot of things, and sometimes people really don't want to take responsibility because it's kind of nice to sit around and be able to blame someone else. And so the time now is that we need to take responsibility, all of us. Mm-hmm. I need to take responsibility, and everybody does. And so we need to take responsibility and look, how can I make a difference? If I want this, how can I make that happen? And I think that we've lost some of that, and for whatever reason, we're where we are. And we have to look at, well, can we bring back some of those things? Is that going to make a difference? But we're here now, and we have to go forward, and how do we do that? And so I think it's a difficult situation, and we're in a world now that is a big different world than it was years and years ago. And even I went to a one-room schoolhouse for 8 years, and so it's actually for 8.5 years because I had kindergarten. I would love for my kids and my grandkids to be able to live in the time that I live. I thought it was really a wonderful time to grow up in America. We don't have that nowadays, and that's a sad thing for me. So I've lost some of that culture that I grew up in, and it would be wonderful if they could grow up in that. But my grandkids don't have that option now. And so I'm hoping that we can look at some things for Alaska, come up with some good ideas that is going to make it better for everyone, and no matter where you live. And so I hope that can happen.
And the task force will bring in all the other stakeholders. Thank you. Next Monday, we're going to hear from Teacher of the Year, Kara Heights of Cordova. I told Kara, I said, Kara, I've never even been nominated for Teacher of the Year. She's really an exciting person. She's really inspirational. And we will hear SB 199, Vocational Education Funding Factor, and SB 170, Voc-Ed Counseling in Schools. With no further business and philosophizing before us, at this time we are adjourned at 9:37.